Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis, and I'm joined by Michael Bowman.
Aloha, guys.
Aloha, my God. Yeah, no, we're not wearing a suit in Maui. And I don't know why my little picture just stopped circulating. It had some cool little picture. Oh, there we go. I'm going to make it look pretty again. There we go. It has flowers and stuff. All right, yeah, so some of you guys are funny. Yeah, aloha, guys. Yeah, we're in paradise. We're really lucky. So we're going to sit here and we're going to have a fun one, a little different Tax Tuesday. We're going to go over all the questions that you guys asked, and a beautiful day to be for Tax Day and in a beautiful area. So if you're not in a beautiful area, then you can pretend.
And we're doing the executive retreat here, which has been a blast, and a lot of mastermind going on and synergy and networking going on and learning a ton from some great professionals.
Yeah, yeah. No, this has been a really cool. Like, if you guys don't know what the executive retreat is, it's not a, we're not pimping it. We're not, telling you guys to come do it, but if you ever get a chance, you should come out to one of these.
I think it's absolutely imperative that you.
Yeah, we're going to have a bunch of the guys come on that are here, guys and gals, obviously, that are going to come on, and we'll have a little fun with them. They have questions, they said, because it's tax day. And Michael, you're supposed to watch out for sharks. We have a lot of things to go over, and I picked a lot of really cool questions. First one is, it is tax day, so this is the one day of the year where I disappoint the government as much as it disappoints me. Yeah, I think that's funny.
I like it.
It's almost as good as I'm glad I only pay taxes on what I owe as opposed to what I tell people I make. That's another fun one. All right. Just remember, there's always the social media. You can always go out to the YouTube and the Facebook pages of Anderson Advisors. We're always putting out content. Even while we're here, we have lots of stuff in the can that's constantly being put out. There were some changes that came up in the last week. The Government Accountability Office for exempt entities, and we'll talk about some of that. Somebody already has asked questions about charities and why do you have a charity that, why do you have your own as opposed to using somebody else's? Well, you could use somebody else's, but then you lose control of the money. So a lot of times what I care about with our clients is keeping control of it, keeping it in their family, which and doesn't mean that they have to own it.
And making sure it's going to those causes and maximizing dollar for dollar to the people who need it.
Yep. Making sure that you're control. Doing that. Yeah. So a lot of folks realize that when you're doing a 501c3, it's not owned by an individual. It's just controlled by an individual or individuals. And you can bequeath that control to somebody else. So it's keeping it in your family quite often. And charitable actions isn't what you think. Low-income housing is charitable, residential assisted living is charitable, education charitable, scientific causes charitable, amateur sports charitable, all those are charitable causes.
I love how broad they made it. Yep. They really help us out.
Yep. So Tax Tuesday rules. This is Michael. Have you ever done a Tax Tuesday?
No, this is my first time.
So it's Tax Tuesday for Michael's first, so it's awesome. He's one of the partners at Anderson Business Advisors. A lot of you guys have seen Michael out there. If, you can always say hi to him. And for those of you guys who have seen him, he's amazing, active, very energetic speaker, and filled with knowledge and a good dude. Known him for a lot of years, so we're lucky to have him here. As always, this is about being fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. We want to make sure that we're bringing tax knowledge to the masses. If you want a detailed response, something specific on your situation, email it in. You need to be a tax platinum or a tax client. But you can always just ask us on Tax Tuesday, Anderson Advisors. We're really good at just getting your response. I use those questions as part of, if somebody says you're a rock star, so I already, they must not know you.
You said that.
Yeah. I'm just teasing. You ask your question via Tax Tuesday, and we'll make sure. I always grab the questions for the preset questions from that grouping, so you'll see a whole bunch. Hello from hey, Jerry Royce is on there. Hey, Jerry.
Jerry.
Somebody says, from for an Airbnb business in California, these are just questions that are coming in, so I just kind of answer them. Should I set up a separate California LLC disregarded into my existing Wyoming Corp, or can I directly use the Wyoming C Corp? So Tim, just right off the gate, when you have an Airbnb business, it's a hotel if the average guest stays 7 days or less. So if you want all the benefits of passive real estate, then usually you're setting up actually two businesses. One is the host. So you'd have something that's usually it's a corporation. It's doing the short-term rentals. You'll have you'll have an entity that an LLC or whatnot that has the rental, and it'll rent it to the corporation, which will then do this basically sublet to all these different individuals.
So the corporation is doing the active side of the business.
You got it. And that keeps it from making all that income active ordinary income to you, and keeps it from, you're allowed to have your passive income and you still have your active. The idea is usually when you really get down to it, that it's a nice divide between what you'd get on the passive side and what you get on the active side.
Not to get too technical, but they take the total number of bookings divided by the total number of days rented to give you average length of stay.
Yeah. So we have a ton of questions. So I'm going to go through. I've already got some others that are popped
up.
One
thing on that, make sure you update insurance on the property.
Yep. Good call. So it's whenever you're doing Airbnb, you want to make sure that it's not your ordinary homeowner's policy. That you, for example, if you're doing this as a secondary, like it's a second home, then usually you're talking to your insurance guy and they're aware that you're renting it out to others. But if it's your house, and you're doing like a room, you're not going to have coverage underneath an ordinary homeowner's policy.
One last thing also, make sure you're keeping abreast with the state, county, and city regulations and any changes that are going on.
They will ding you.
Because, yeah, the fines are they can get quite severe. And it seems like a lot of municipalities really have been changing them quite regularly.
Yep.
So just keep abreast with those changes, because again, the fines can get out of hand quickly.
So again, we're getting blasted with questions. I'm gonna hold off on them just for a second. We're gonna go through the questions we're gonna be asking today. I have several LLCs taxed as partnerships. I buy foreclosures. Recently, I acquired a property and decided to sell without improvements for about the price I foreclosed, 10% gain. Can I still maintain my passive status in that LLC for this year, even though I flipped or resold this one property in 6 months? We'll be answering that. I am closing on the sale of a property purchased with my LLC of my solo 401k. Is there a tax benefit by paying a JV partner from the LLC bank account versus directly from escrow? Meaning, does paying out of escrow reduce profit that would be subject to tax? We'll go over that too. Can I take advantage of business deductions for travel, education, conferences if I do not directly own rental properties and instead invest in real estate as a limited partner in syndications and funds that generate K-1s? I have created a management C-Corp. These are long questions. I have created a management C-Corp that manages all my different LLC and properties. I'm not taking any salary out of this corporation at this time. The C-Corp has an employee welfare plan that pays my out-of-pocket medical expenses. My question is, from this plan, can I reimburse myself the employee contribution of my W-2 job healthcare plan? So I'll explain what all that means in a little bit. And we'll answer it. If I purchase a property within an opportunity zone and start a business based from that building that passes the opportunity zone test, do I still need to improve the property as well? We'll go over that. I plan on having my Wyoming LLC become 100% shareholder of my two C-Corps, one corp for flipping homes and one corp for flipping raw land. Will my LLC have to file a tax return even if I zero out the revenue with expenses and salary to myself? We'll go over that. If a person uses cost segregation on a rental home, isn't the depreciation recaptured upon sale of the home? Can a 1031 exchange be used? Somebody asked that question already today in the little question window. I saw that. What's the best entity structure for Airbnb, HomeAway, and VRBO? My plan is to sign long-term leases, 12 months, and rent them out of these on these platforms. So it sounds like this person is renting from somebody long and then subletting short. So that's great. And then we're going to have some special guests from the 2019 Executive Retreat in Maui. It is gorgeous here. Beautiful week.
Absolutely.
And what a great group. Yeah. I can say we're on our last little stretch of it. We usually meet till noon. This one today is going to go a little longer because everybody gets together and we do panels, and it's just a heck of a lot of fun. And these are just really great folks. So we'll get through all these. So we'll start off. So I have several LLCs taxed as partnerships. I buy foreclosures. Recently, I acquired a property and decided to sell without improvements for about the price I foreclosed on. Can I still maintain my passive status in that LLC for this year, even though I flipped, resold this one property in 6 months? Michael, what do you think?
It's going to be an intent-based test. Dealer goes, and there's some factors that the IRS are going to look for. The number and frequency of sales. So it seems like you're buying the properties, you're holding them long-term. One, I don't think is going to kick you over. You know, they also look at the extent of the improvements, how the property was acquired, and then your sales efforts and your holding period. comparative to your other sources of income.
Yep.
So one, I don't think is going to kick you over. We are dealing with the IRS. So there's a wild card in there.
Well, again, Michael says is absolutely right. It's an intent-based test, and they look at facts and circumstances. That's why people that say, hey, if you hold a property for a year and then sell it, you never have to worry about being labeled a dealer. And here's the difference. If I buy a property with the intent to lease it out and receive long-term appreciation, then I'm an investor. If I buy a property with the intent to sell it, it doesn't matter how long I held onto it. In fact, there's a court case where the individual held onto it for 10 years and they sold it after 10 years and they were still considered a dealer. So the IRS looks at these two things. If I buy it with the intent to sell it, then it's inventory. It's Cheerios and the Mini Mart where they're selling Cheerios. It doesn't matter how long the Cheerios sit on the shelf. If I have the Cheerios sitting on the shelf and somebody buys it after a year and a half, it doesn't make it long-term gain. It's still inventory.
And looking at the marketing efforts too.
Yeah, they look at everything. So you have several LLCs, you buy foreclosures. So the question is, what do you do with those properties? If you're buying those foreclosures and you fix them up and you sell them, you're a dealer. If you buy those properties and you fix them up and rent them, then you're an investor. And if you accidentally sell one once in a while just because, hey, I bought it and I really don't want to do the improvements, I just want to dump it and I get my 10%, it doesn't change what you are. So that one little one-off isn't going to matter so much. I wish it was an easier answer.
Again, I think we covered it. I think we got it.
All right. Formed a C Corp in California, thinking I was going to flip in wholesale in California, but you're doing it all in Oklahoma. Is it recommended to close the C Corp if not used? I live in California. I just reincorporated in you're federally, you're still a C Corp. State-wise, I would move it. I'd take it.
Yeah, the other tendency is to foreign file, and you're gonna read some articles. You just need a foreign file it, but then you're paying two sources of state fees.
$800 a year in California sucks.
And then it could be a state income tax on both states, where you might get a little offset. But you also want to take maybe look at some seasoning of the corporation, how long you've had it. Might be a good thing to take a look at. But if you haven't had it very long, no expenses accrued in there, you know, close it down and open up in the state where you're going to be doing the business. Don't pay two sources of state fees.
Absolutely. So unless you like paying extra fees, don't do it. Then the next one is, can you talk about a tax deduction for having team meetings in my house or my S Corp in the annual, semi-annual meetings, et cetera? I need a refresher. So Evelyn, what you're talking about is 280A. And your corporation can rent your house or any property that you use as a residence, dwelling. Well,
anybody can rent that house.
Yeah, so you can rent it to your own corp. Your corp pays you if it's 14 days or less. The statute actually says less than 15 days for some reason.
I love how they word that, less than 15 days. Perfect.
I think they're drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 14 days or less, really. And you don't have to recognize it as income. It's actually kind of nice. So what you do is you do your meetings for your corporation there. The corporation gets a deduction. You get to keep the cash tax-free. That's a fancy way of saying, hey, I got money in my pocket without having to pay tax on it. By the way, we have one of the attendees from the executive retreat, Mr. Brent Mott. Welcome.
Legend.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm going to move this a little closer to you so we can hear you. So you spent the last almost a week with us.
Yeah, it's been great. Amazing time at the retreat. Had a lot of fun. Was able to, before we even started through the networking, save about $30,000 on some equipment that I was about to buy by talking to one of the speakers. And that was before the event even started. And then today, I'm looking at buying a small portfolio from one of the other speakers that I learned an hour ago from you that qualifies for the nonprofit. So
nice.
That's awesome.
So yeah, picking up a ton of really useful information that's really going to help out my business.
We love it. Now, you can't come here and, you're a real estate investor, right?
I am.
How long have you been investing in real estate?
So I've been investing for about 10 years. I've been doing it full time for about 6.
Nice. So you don't do anything else. Jeez, what do you do with your life? You come out to Hawaii, apparently.
We're going to be home for a total of 9 days this month. Next week, we're going to Vegas, and then we're driving the PCH from L.A. to Sonoma for a friend's wedding. Yeah.
Pacific Highway?
Yeah.
Nice.
Great drive. Big Sur up there. Oh, man, fantastic.
All right. I have to ask you a question.
Okay.
You need to ask us a tax question. Think of a tax question. Any tax questions come to mind? Because you're sitting here on a tax Tuesday.
So. Tax Tuesday. So
you pay your taxes yet, by the way? We're watching the IRS's.
Yeah, it's that day. So tax question, I have a few questions about the nonprofit, the 501c3. Why do they have to make them so complicated?
They named it after the code.
They're really creative.
It's better than,
If you really want to find out what any of the numbers mean, just like it's actually the actual code number.
That's the equivalent of me using my addresses for my LLC names.
Yep.
I think they got it from us.
They're already yelling at me for not advancing the slides. I'm just talking to somebody right now. Right? ignore the slide that's up. Go ahead.
So I don't have one set up. I'm only 34. Mm-hmm. So I've tax-deferred investing, so self-directed IRAs, the 401ks. I can't touch those for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. So I've been just kind of and I want access to my capital, to my assets, mm-hmm. long before that. So that's never been an attractive strategy. And I'm still in an accumulation phase in my life and my business. Mm-hmm. So thinking of ways to defer has never been a huge priority. So learning about the 501 CP3O.
Just call it a nonprofit.
The 501, the nonprofit. Yeah. I mean, that has huge, huge implications. My active flipping business, wholesaling business, supports my lifestyle. Mm-hmm. My rentals are all passive income for the future. Mm-hmm. So using the nonprofit to hold these military housing is going to be really beneficial for me.
Right. Yeah. So anytime you're doing something that is for the benefit of society. So a lot of people don't even realize how many almost all hospitals, almost all educational institutions and all universities, just about every single one of them, is a nonprofit. The NFL was even a nonprofit up until a few years ago. You have just about every residential assisted living would qualify as a nonprofit. Low to moderate income housing, if you do HUD housing, that would actually qualify as a nonprofit. The biggest thing to get around your head, that you get your head around on a nonprofit, is that you don't own it. You just simply control it. And in my world, I typically say control is worth a lot more than ownership.
So I do have a question that I thought of while you were mm-hmm. talking about that. Can I use any of the cost segregation if I hold properties in a nonprofit? Can I use any of the cost segregation to offset any other income?
Well, you're going to look at where's the income going and where the most bang for the buck is going.
So when you have cost seg, it can offset, if you're a real estate professional, you can offset all your active income. Otherwise, your cost segregation, which is basically rapid depreciation, is just really going to offset your real estate. You would qualify as a real estate professional because that's all you do. It's the two-part test, 750 hours, half of your time, plus you materially participate on your real estate. So that's the test. You're going to hit that easy. But there's a downside, which is when you accelerate your depreciation, it does not count when you give the property to a charity. So if I give a property to a charity, if I've owned it less than a year, it's the basis in the property. If I've owned it more than a year, it's its fair market value. And I don't have to worry about straight line depreciation, the 27 and a half or 39 year. But if I have accelerated my depreciation, so I took that depreciation and I made it personal property, it's like 5 and 7 and 15 year property, I have to subtract that from the fair market value when I donate it. It's not a horrible thing, but it's like, is something I still want to consider. So if I accelerated depreciation, I wrote off, let's say, all my carpet and my wallpaper and some electrical system, and I wrote off an extra 10 grand and I give a property that's worth 200, I only get a $190,000 deduction. You kind of think about it. I already got my $10,000 deduction. So that's that. You asked a very good question, by the way. Not too many people would even think about
that. Far ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for visiting with
us. Awesome. Thank you so much.
You can hang in here. We're going to go through a bunch of questions. These guys are mad at me for not advancing my slides, so I'm going to advance some slides. Watch this. All right. You can hang out and listen to this stuff. Right. I'm closing on the sale of a property purchased with my LLC of my 401k. Is there a tax benefit by paying a JV partner from LLC bank account versus from escrow? Meaning, does paying out of escrow reduce profit that would be subject to tax? Now, this is a great question. So first off,
I'm going to have you answer, and then I'm going to kind of tailor it in a way that I thought of when I read this question before.
All right. So the first off is, it sounds like you have debt. So if you have a JV partner, quite often they're really a lender or they're in equity. And in either case, it's not going to matter how you pay them, whether it's from the bank account or directly out of escrow. If you have an LLC that's holding real estate and you have a partner in it, then whatever the loss or whatever the gain is, if it's proportionate, and you can actually make it non-proportionate, that's a hint, it's going to flow back to the solo 401k no matter how it, you know, no matter where you pay it out of, it doesn't matter. But that solo 401k is really important. If you have a JV partner who is a lender, now we don't have to worry about debt finance income. If this was an IRA, in fact, Brent, this is something you and I discussed. If you have a IRA or a Roth IRA, a self-directed IRA, then when you have income that is based off of debt, so you have a real estate property that has a loan on it, you have income that it's taxable income called debt finance income for that IRA that you actually have to pay tax on, whether it's a Roth or otherwise. So this is a really, really big distinction. You do not have debt finance income when you have a 401k, solo 401k. So it does not matter. So the answer to the question is, it doesn't matter where it gets paid out of, an escrow or from the LLC, it's immaterial. What we care about is it debt or is it profit? And will it have an impact? No. But that solo 401k makes all the difference in the world if it is debt.
And one of the things I look at this from a different perspective is, where should it be coming out of? You know, if it's a JV LLC, and where are the agreements? And so coming directly out of escrow, it might be a little sloppy. You might want to bring it through the JV LLC and then out. Or just make sure wherever the agreements that there's a proper flow, that if anything gets questioned, you've done it the right way.
Absolutely. Spoken like a true attorney.
I know. I'm just big into corporate formalities. So it's, you know, I just don't like people getting a little sloppy and cutting corners. Not done so much from a tax perspective, but from a a partner perspective or a lawsuit perspective, things start unraveling when you start getting lazy and cutting corners.
All right. I have a ton of questions that have come in, but we're just going to ignore them for now. And we're just going to go right to the next question.
We've got some good questions coming up.
I know. But trust me, if this thing goes back another page, then I'll never see them. So you guys don't see it, but I get questions all day long on these things, and I like to make sure. All right. Can I take advantage of business deductions if I do not directly own rental properties and instead invest in real estate as a limited partner in syndications and funds that generate K-1s? Michael, what say you?
The first thing we need to establish is, are you personally investing as a limited partner, or are you using an entity to invest into the limited partner? Mm-hmm. Using your C corporation, if it's managing the entity that's making the contribution into the syndication, then it's actually managing it. And what we need to do is have a service agreement between the two, and then we're able to move money up to the corporation and then expense it out to the corporation.
Right. So what Michael's saying, and I'm gonna step back just for a second because you jumped about three steps forward on this one. Can you take any business deductions if you are a passive investor? And the answer is really a kind of a no. And the reason being is, like, think of your real estate, you're doing REITs, you're doing stock market trading and things like that. It used to be you could write off miscellaneous itemized deductions on your Schedule A.
Correct.
So if you're 1040 Schedule A, you had to exceed 2% of your adjusted gross income and you could write it off. And that went out the door with the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So what you end up having to do is make sure that you always are either actively participating in something, or you have an entity that is engaged in active management of something if it's holding passive. So Michael's answer is actually giving you the strategy, which is, instead of just being a limited partner in a syndication, you should have an LLC that is the partner in the syndication.
Correct.
And that LLC could then be managed by the corporation that covers all the deductions. So it sounds much, basically you'd have one entity for your investments and one entity managing the entity in my investments. So it's actually really cool. Yeah. And then you get to take all the deductions you want. You
from a tax-wise standpoint, it makes sense. But then from an asset protection standpoint, it makes sense. So it's very complimentary.
Yes. All right. So that's a good one.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. 2 in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
I'm going to answer some questions now. says, in regards to the 280A form, if you guys don't want 280A, it's reimbursement from a business to you. Like, you can actually pay, rent your house out. People do it for Airbnb too. They rent out their homes for 14 days or less, and they don't have to pay tax on it. So in regards to the 280 form, how do you get reimbursed? It's not really reimbursed. It's actually paying you. So the corporation pays you. It could be by check. It could be electronic. It could be anything. As long as it gives you the cash, it's a cash basis taxpayer. So are you. It gets to take the deduction when it pays you. And then you are under an exception to the rule of you have to recognize the income. You under 280A G2, you just don't have to recognize the income. You don't have to pay any tax on it. You don't have to even report it. So it's great.
Let's make it reasonable too.
Let's see. What do you do if you've taken the 27 and a half year depreciation, you held the property for more than 30 years? First off, you celebrate because that's great. But there's no way to take more depreciation on it. What you can do, though, and this is kind of mean, is you, if you give it to charity, you'd get the fair market value written off. So that would be a property that I'd keep my eye on as to whether I ever want a big tax deduction. You could always sell it, 1031 exchange it. You could sell it, not 1031 exchange, and invest it into a qualified opportunity zone. There's lots of stuff you could do. In the meantime, you're just having taxable income come in from the rents. One easy thing that you could do is buy more real estate and offset the rents that come in off the property that's already been depreciated by buying more real estate and continuing to take the depreciation off of it. So it's always kind of a math puzzle. How much depreciation do I need? If I need more depreciation, can I accelerate my depreciation by doing a cost seg? You know, so, and if I still have a tax appetite, do I want to get that property out of my name by giving it to something else? Yeah, I'm fine. We just had another executive retreat.
I felt greatness walk in.
And Lane's looking around. Kawaoka. Lane Kawaoka is awesome.
Lane is here.
And does syndications over on Oahu. So he happens to be here with us in Maui. So everybody else is like amazed by Hawaii, and he's like, it is what it is, right? No, but Lane's awesome because actually earlier this year in January, some of you guys know that I was over here teaching at the Hawaii Convention Center with iHeartRadio and doing a really cool thing for the locals on investing. And Lane was kind enough to come out and work with us. His wife's a first grade school teacher, works with disadvantaged youth, and is an amazing person in and of herself. And here's Lane, comes to the executive retreat. Why don't you give him a little update on who you are and what you do and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, so I used to be an engineer, left that day job 6 months ago because I started investing in real estate in 2009, bought 11 single family homes, realized that they weren't quite scalable, even though that's a great way to start. And then today in over almost a couple dozen syndication deals as LP and general partner, also mm-hmm. do a little bit of syndication too.
Where do you do them all?
Mostly in the southeast. You know, where the,
so you live in Hawaii and you're investing in the south, right. Southeast and
live where you want, invest where the numbers make sense.
Yep.
Right on.
So a great example. A lot of people are geographically scared. And here you are. You're probably, 2,600 miles away from your investments?
Yeah. I mean, that's nice about being an LP. You know, you're making all your bet on the front end. So I'll go out and if I see a deal, I underwrite it, get the P&Ls and the rent rolls, and then put mm-hmm. it in my analyzer, get to know the operators, and then I fly out, spend a couple hours, walk around the block, and then get my butt back here.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. Somebody says aloha, by the way. You have to say mahalo, right? I'm learning. Yeah. So you're sitting here in a Tax Tuesday. First off, how have you liked the executive retreat?
Awesome.
Great, what do you think of the people?
Group, great group of people.
What about some takeaways?
You know, it's nice meeting a bunch of other people, and there's always some kind of synergy you can create with other people. And what's nice is some people do different things. So it's very uncompetitive, and you're doing the same marketing tactics. I need to hire an employee. That's something that's a takeaway from this. It's just something I'm not aware of. And for other people, it's just second nature to them. They've done it, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of have seen among the attendees is there's no scarcity mentality to it. Everyone, there's enough pie for everybody, and you guys are just synergizing, getting together, and building from where you guys are at. It's been awesome.
Who's your favorite that you've listened to as far as the speakers?
Michael Boone.
I like your guys' talk on the Nevada asset protection and then the bonus depreciation, and we do it on all our deals. I didn't know it was all
one. This is a good one. What was your effective tax rate this year?
4%. My AGI was 130 something, and I paid $5,000 in taxes. It's about 4%. It's crazy.
All right. So what he did, you guys have heard me talk about this stuff. He's a real estate professional. So there's somebody actually asking questions who lives here. They live in Hawaii. what Lane did is, because he's a real estate professional, he did cost segregation on the properties that he's acquiring. And all it did is it lowered your tax to, you made 135 and you paid five.
Yeah, but I also made 200,000 of capital gains year from selling a bunch of properties.
So you made three something.
Yeah, and everybody thinks that 1031 is how you delay taxes, but I just use the bonus depreciation from all these passive deals I went into.
That's how you do it. And we tell people that, and it's perfectly legal. It's you get to choose whether or not you want to take the straight line depreciation or whether you want to separate. In from an accounting standpoint, it's called 1250 property, the structural property, versus 1245 property, which is the personal property attached to the real estate. In other words, there's no, you always look at real estate. Real estate is nothing until you start pouring cement and stuff like that on it, right? So it's always the improvement. And then of that improvement, some of it's structure and some of it's like the electric system. So somebody says, so we have Jennifer who lives here in Hawaii. I live in Hawaii, started learning about real estate investing. There's a local real estate investment hui that's a group that only invests in mainland, in particular Indiana and Ohio. That sounds like Xavier. Yeah, that sounds like Paul Xavier. Is that who it is, Jennifer? And then what do you think about the new short-term Airbnb regulations? So, yeah, so Jennifer knows Paul. Paul's a great guy, by the
way. He's awesome. Yep, yeah. Fantastic.
So
short-term rentals, I don't know too much about it. I focus on cash flow on the mainland. I'm not looking at – I don't buy off pro forma, no development deals for me. I want cash flow only because I feel like there may be a recession coming up in the next couple of years. So.
Yep. And that's the key, guys. So if there's one thing that is the takeaway that I always give people is your holding period's forever when you have cash flow properties. You don't care. You're not in a hurry to sell. In fact, there's a few questions in here. Here somebody says, I bought a few properties over 20 years ago and have no mortgages. Titled into my individual name. What is the best exit strategy with the least tax consequences? That's a great situation to be in. I would tell you your best exit is to die and let the basis step up or to give it away and take the deduction now or 1031 it into more, like the old Monopoly. Buy houses and trade them into hotels, right? Don't do hotels, but do apartments, do multifamily. Things like that. But what Lane is talking about is cash flow is king. So you have these investments. Do you have an exit on them or do you always just hold them and just keep?
We try and sell them in like 5 years because we're buying a lot of 1970s, 1980s product. And we try and put a little lips on like a pig, but at the end of the hold of 5 years, you want to dump these assets. You don't want to be holding on to them. So sell in five, some of the better assets, B+ assets that are built 1980s, 1990s.
So you're playing the game. Hey, there's going to be some deferred maintenance. Do you want to get into the complete rehab and then trade them? Do you guys ever 1031 exchange your investments, or you guys pay a little tax on it when you receive it?
Typically not. Most of our investors, they're in multiple deals, dozens and dozens of passive investments. So they just want to move on to the next venture.
Hey, it all works out, and there's a way to keep the taxes down to nil, even on the situation. Dini is who asked about the 20-year property. You could always carry back a note and receive the income over a long period of time. You're going to have both dividend recapture and you're going to have long-term capital gains. So I thought about a 1031 exchange, but don't want to deal with the tenants anymore. Dini, I hear you. What you could always do, let me give you an easy one. This is something where if you email me, I'll put you in touch with some folks. If you don't like tenants, then what you do is you 1031 exchange into storage units. And that's something you could do. You could actually be a tenant in common on it, or you could just go out and get your own and get rid of the tenants. If you want some turnkey opportunities, there's some folks out there that do that too. Let's go back to some more questions. Do you have any tax questions you want to ask? Mm-hmm. Since you're sitting here, I could ask you.
A few other ones here too.
Oh, there's a ton that have been coming in.
Got a lot of questions there.
I know. You see how it works? Everybody thinks I just sit here and pick my nose when I'm doing this. Now I got to show Michael here just how many. Let's see. Can the charitable purpose or its activities take place in another country? Yes. So if somebody's talking about human trafficking in Libya, absolutely you can do that. You approve it in the U.S., but it can be an out-of-the-country purpose. Can you do more clarification about the IRA owning real estate? IRAs, typically, it's up to your custodian as to what you invest in. So a lot of people think there's restrictions on IRAs to buy real estate. There isn't.
It's a contract.
It's basically when you have a custodian, they have to buy it for you in an IRA. And you have something called debt finance income. When an IRA has debt, let's say that you finance half a property, then half the income that comes in is taxable, even though it's in an IRA. You pay tax on that debt finance income. So if you do a 401k, you don't have to worry about that, nor do you have a custodian. So I tend to like 401ks over IRAs for that reason. Plus, you can dump a lot more money into them. Are platinum membership dues deductible to a business? Absolutely. To an individual, no.
When you're taking a look at it, business expenses, customary, ordinary, reasonable, and necessary.
Yep. What are the tax implications of a solo 401k owning more than $250,000 in assets? There is no tax implication. You just have to file a form 5500, which is just they're simple, really basic. So if it's $250,000 or more, when selling a rental property, do you report that on Schedule D? No, it's on Schedule E. Oh, you have your capital gains. I'd have to take a peek at that. I don't know the exact form. That would be a Jeff question. Let's jump to some of the slides. If you email that in, Ross, I'll just get you the answer. These guys will do that stuff. I have created a management C-Corp, and I believe you're actually right. You have a form there, 4797. I believe that's correct. I have created a management C-Corp that manages all my different LLCs and properties. I'm not taking any salary out of this corporation at this time. This C-Corporation has an employee welfare plan. It's really a 105 plan, cafeteria plan, or health reimbursement plan that pays my out-of-pocket medical expenses. My question is, from this plan, could I reimburse myself the employee contribution of my W-2 job healthcare plan? Michael, do you care about this one, or do you want me to answer this one?
Section 105A plan?
Yeah, can I reimburse myself for the employee contribution to the W-2?
I think the rule on this is you just can't double dip.
Yeah, can't double dip. A little closer than I can hear you.
No double dipping.
Yeah. So if your employer is paying for the plan and it's pre-tax, meaning you're not being taxed on the money. And this is the easiest way to look at this is a lot of companies will cover the employee. And then if you have family, like you have kids and a spouse that you want to add on to it, they'll take it out of your paycheck. Your C-Corp can reimburse you the portion that came post-tax, not the portion that came pre-tax.
And I think that's where a lot of people make the mistake of pre-tax versus post-tax.
Yep. And one of the cool things is even your deductibles, even your co-pays, it can pay too. I'm going to go back to another question here. I was told to trade stock option via an LLC. Would doing so lessen my capital gains burden? No, Jeremy, it only if you have a corporation that is a partner in it. And this is a big one. When you're trading and you trade stock options, you have really two choices. You're either kind of like this, what I would think everybody is really an investor. There's some people that will try to get you to be a trader, and that's just a minefield. That, you know, there's so many court cases where
customary.
Yeah, you better be making your living off it if you're a trader. You got to be doing over 700 trades a year if you're going to be a trader. Otherwise, use an LLC tax as a partnership with the corporation as a partner. Then you don't have to worry about miscellaneous itemized deductions that no longer exist. You can actually write off against it. You don't have to qualify as a trader.
The other thing about that is the business expenses go on a business return as opposed to your personal return.
Another question somebody asked is, do I have to be a real estate professional to be able to deduct real estate investment related expenses? For example, training, car mileage, etc. I do have rental income and have a lot of real estate investment activities, but we don't have enough hours to surpass hours in my W-2 job. Should I use Schedule E or other form? You can write it off, Grace. And as long as it's just going to offset your rental income, and that's not a situation where you have to worry about hours. It's just your losses are passive. So if you have passive losses, you can't offset your W-2 income. Where the real estate professional comes in is it takes passive losses and makes them active. So yeah, you still get to write off your expenses that are associated with that and Schedule E's the place. All right, next one, we're going to advance the slide.
I got a question that comes up from my folks a lot.
Yep.
So all my investors, they invest passively and they get these nice bonus depreciation that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So one spouse might be a doctor making $400,000 a year. The other spouse stays at home with the children. We're trying to make them into a real estate professional.
Mm-hmm.
How are some, can they just go out and do they even need a real estate license? Can they just make some referrals and work in real estate? What are some
great question.
Easy ways to safe harbor this?
Yep. So here's how it works. And Michael, you feel free to, I'm a Hobart on these things. So when you're a real estate professional, there's a first part test, which is a two-part test, and a second part test. The first part test is 750 hours and greater than 50% of your professional time. One spouse has to qualify under part one. The second test is material participation with your activities, and that's a cumulative test for both spouses. So let's go back to your scenario. So first professional makes $400,000 a year. Let's say it's husband wife, you want to qualify as a real estate professional so that the real estate losses, so you can do bonus depreciation, can offset the income being made from spouse number one. So spouse number two has to be a real estate professional. Does she have to be a licensed real estate professional? No.
No. You also want to be able to log all this activity and keep a log justifying it.
Yep. You want to keep contemporaneous notes of your time. But she doesn't, they wouldn't. But they would still have 750 hours. So that's the minimum. What accountants screw up on, and I'll just give you what I see, is accountants will oftentimes not group all of your rental activities. So the part one has to do with, doesn't matter what you're doing. It's like I could be a construction guy and I would meet the first part of that 750 hours. The second part is material participation on my real estate. And I have to make an election to group all my real estate activities. So if I have a bunch of rentals, I better be grouping them. So back to your scenario.
Follow up on that. So what if this individual, they don't have any rentals. They just have six $50,000 private placement positions.
And then they'd have to be materially participating in that. And there's about nine different tests to qualify.
So what about, let's just say they don't want to get some C-class, D-class properties out in Ohio and create a couple of headaches for themselves. What if they were to be a general partner on a triple net deal? What is the least amount of work they need to do to get the RRP?
The least amount is really the two spouses together should spend 100 hours. I think 500 hours is the threshold that you don't have to worry about anything. So if they both spend cumulative 500 hours total, we don't care about the 50% rule on that one. It's just material participation. Both spouses doing that, then we don't have to worry
about
it.
And no grouping. They don't have, they can be,
they would group them all. They would group them all together. All their real estate activities, all those K-1s would go into one activity and they would group them all. But they would have to hit that 500 hours. If you want to do the 100 hours, then nobody else can do more time on all of your real estate, on all of their real estate when you add it all up. So you couldn't have one manager. So for example, if they're doing what you're saying and you're the general partner on all of them and you exceed their time, then they better hit the 500 hours. Otherwise, the 100 hours cumulative. And that's both spouses together, by the way. Isn't that crazy?
That's not hard to do.
I go, yeah. Duh. Well, it's what
document,
Michael's,
document, document.
Yeah, what Michael said is absolutely true. You got to make sure that you're in charge of that, by the way. So we have another guest. So we have a bunch that we're going through. Did I actually look at this one? No, we haven't answered the opportunity zones, like the one that I'm looking at right now. So hold on for a second, Jason. I'm going to introduce you, but we got to answer some of the slides once in a while. If I purchase a property within an opportunity zone and start a business based from that building that passes the opportunity zone test, do I still need to improve the property as well? Michael, if you want to whack that one out of the park, you certainly can.
Yeah, you definitely have to go ahead and substantially improve the property. Double the adjusted basis in the property.
Even if you have the business from it?
If you have the business.
I like messing with Michael. So you have two things here. You have the business. So you're starting a business in the opportunity zone based out of that building. Then you're looking at two different assets. You have the building, which Michael's absolutely right. You have to substantially improve it, or it has to be an abandoned property that you took over that. I think it had to be abandoned for 5 years, or it has to be land. But I'm assuming that this is, sounds like there's improvement. But you have to put in, you have to double the improvement is basically what it is. So it's $1 million property, 800,000 improvement, 200,000 land. You got to put 800,000 in within 31 months, written plan. If there's a business there, it just means 50% of its employees' payroll expense comes out of that opportunity zone.
Make sure you carve out the land.
Carve out the land. And on the actual business, it doesn't convert the land. I've not seen anything. So this is one of those areas where I would say it sounds like you're doing a lot more. And here's where it really gets into it. When you're doing an active business, I believe it's a 70% test if you own the subsidiary. And then, and this is going to sound a little bit disjointed because I'm using the percentages. It's 90% of the fund has to have opportunity zone property, but that opportunity zone property can include both the business and the land. And so depending on the value of the building and the land, I should say land, it's the building, the real estate, depending on the value of that business, we may not have to worry about the value of the property. And we could just ignore it and say, yeah, it's still part of the opportunity zone because we meet the threshold for all of our property. So it has to be a pretty valuable business, but it's not uncommon to have that business be worth, six, seven, eight times what the value of the business or the real estate is worth. So it gets a little bit convoluted, but I would want to know more about the facts and circumstances.
Let's introduce Jason. Jason just walked in. He's one of the attendees here at the executive retreat. Yeah. Jason, welcome.
Great to be here, guys.
Jason's one of those lazy guys that really doesn't do much, kicks his feet up in the lazy boy all day and No, I'm just kidding. Jason makes me tired when I hear all the stuff he's doing.
Yeah, so Jason is here at the executive retreat with us in Maui. What do you think?
I absolutely love it.
You love Maui?
I love Maui. I like Maui better than the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went on the cruise with us last year. They went to Alaska. Yeah, how about all the people that are here?
The people that are here are great. All the Anderson people are great. Everybody that's joining your little fan club, this is great.
Little fan club.
It's a very small group of people that we're all in line.
Yep, everybody's valued.
Thinking the same way.
Yeah, so Jason's why don't you give him a little bit on you? Because you're a big construction guy. You're a developer.
I own a construction company and a development firm, and we build in 5 states right now, about to expand into South Dakota.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're in Montana.
Montana, Alaska, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon.
And you do big projects. You do a lot of that.
I do a lot of big projects, a lot of grocery stores, a lot of financial institutions, inline retail, a lot of Starbucks.
Starbucks. We love
lots of Starbucks.
We're not saying anything. We love the Starbucks.
Yes.
We love the mermaid. So if anybody from Seattle, you get a thumbs up from Jason. Anything that you learned or any questions that you had?
Give us some aha moments from the last week.
We'll do the aha and then you can stump us with questions.
The aha from this meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The true aha moment was the paper subdivisions from Jared Osmond. That was great education. Things I already knew, and I mean, I do this every day. I create that piece of paper for multiple clients. I'm basically subdividing land all the time. And I create this piece of paper for a project that I'm either building or building for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought, why don't I just create the piece of paper, sell off half of it, and create free land?
So an expert learned from another expert.
Absolutely.
Isn't that cool?
I mean, it was an aha moment, like ice cream cone on the forehead.
That's awesome.
I just love, like, you know, you do this and all of a sudden someone gave you another way to look at someone.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Jared's a stud. That's Donnie and Marie's nephew, by the way, for those of you guys who know the odds. Super nice guy. Very, very successful. Yeah,
awesome
does guy. Residential assisted living, has his own furniture stores, is a developer, builds buildings, just does an amazing job. And comes
super
out
creative.
Here. Yep. Comes out here and hangs out with our sorry butts every year.
I think that's another thing it's about thinking outside the box also.
Yep.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned, all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
Hey, tax question. You got to stump us.
Okay. Let's say you're building a federal credit union, federally mandated credit union in a state like Washington State that has state sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
How does the contractor get around the state sales and use tax? Because the credit union hands you a piece of paper and refuses to pay any of that.
Michael?
Yeah. That was an easy one. I mean, like, you know what? Just look at section 123 of the IRS code and we're good to go.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you got me. I don't know.
All right. So, I do know enough to be really dangerous in this. And so when you have federal trade, so you have exempt organizations. And so exempt organizations fall into many categories. Federally mandated organizations like in federal credit unions and federal governments and other things like that.
Right.
Government entities fall into this other category where they're exempt from sales tax and federal taxes as a whole. As anybody who's here who's been on boards and nonprofits realize, you got to be in that name to get the exclusion. So thinking about your issue, you're building for them, but you're buying the materials. They're gonna stick you with the bill, even though the organization is exempt. And so here's my advice to you: they should buy the materials that you use. You will not be paying sales tax on it.
It's a great way to think of it.
You have to have them buy it. They will not pay sales tax. If you buy it, you will.
Interesting. Okay.
Is that worth the price of admission?
That is worth the price of admission.
Because what it is it's there. In fact, I know this as a specific. Now that it's ringing so many bells,
yep.
They have to be the one that acquires the asset. Otherwise, Washington State is going to say, you owe the sales tax. And if you don't pay the sales tax, then they're going to say, well, you use the material to build, and they're going to charge you the use tax. Am I getting close?
Yeah, absolutely close. We've been paying it all along. So.
Yeah, so we can avoid that completely. Okay. By what you do is you have the federal, you have the credit union itself buy all materials with its exemption, and now you won't have that issue. It'll save you the sales tax.
Okay, it's all great.
Isn't that fun?
That is very fun. I just learned something too. Woohoo!
Yes. Stuff that you never wanted to know, right? I don't even know why that's sitting in my head.
I'm going to use it.
I thought it was gone. All right, let's take a look at these things. Toby, how can I find out more about storage units? So he's talking about Ryan Gibson.
Okay.
What do you think of Ryan?
I thought Ryan was a wealth of information. He really has all of his ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. He's got all the right teammates in his in-house team, yep. Which is a great way that it's a great way to trust who you're dealing with.
He does storage units, and they do syndications of the storage units, and they're pretty cool. I love the automation of it. It just sits there and the basically, well, you build these things.
I do.
Yeah. So how much does it cost per foot to build a storage unit?
It depends on what kind of materials, what kind of project you want to have. But it's usually like a basic bare bone storage unit. You're looking at about $10 to $12 a foot.
$10 to $12. Are you flipping kidding me?
The barrier to entry is so low on these.
$10 to $12 a foot. You've got to be kidding me. Jiminy Christmas. I'm going to have you build some storage units.
Well, more and more of our clients are getting into it just because of the automation, like you guys mentioned. It's really, really
easy. Somebody talking about doing stuff at $40 a foot.
We're talking just the storage unit itself. You've got to add the concrete slab, and then if you want electrical, you know, all these upgrades. But we're talking just the building itself.
Just the building itself. That's freakish. Well, and if anybody wants to get a hold of you, all you got to do, guys, is send to Tax Tuesday for if anybody wants any information on any of this stuff that we're talking about. Because some of you guys are saying, hey, how do I find out? Just email Tax Tuesday and they'll forward it on. Do I allocate holding company expense to rental properties? Well, I'd understand that, but the rental properties all flow through a holding company that all ends up on your Schedule D, or excuse me, Schedule E. So it's all being allocated over. Is it okay to pay my personal travel to visit properties owned in the solo 401k? Ooh, that's a weird one. I don't think so.
No, you can't, because your personal travel, and are you improving the property? Is that why you're going on traveling to it? You're starting to dance in a line that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, Roger, what I would do is I'd make sure you have two sides. You could have the 401k and you could still have a management entity, and that solo 401k could be sponsored by the corporation, and then I would just have the expenses go as a business expense to the corporation. I wouldn't be reimbursing yourself expenses out of the 401k. I don't think you can do that. I think it's a prohibited transaction.
I could definitely not do it.
All right. We have a bunch of other questions to go through. You can hang out and think of other things to stump us with. I plan on having my Wyoming LLC become a 100% shareholder of my two C Corps. One C Corp for flipping homes and one C Corp for flipping raw land. Will my LLC have to file a tax return, even if I zero out the revenue with expenses and salary to myself?
Well, first of all, you have to ask, how's your LLC tax? Is it disregarded down to you, or is it taxes apart? Partnership. If it's a partnership, yeah, I'll have to file a tax return. But if there's no income or loss, then or no income in there, you're not paying taxes on it.
Yep. What Michael just said is absolutely 100%. The LLC, it doesn't matter what it owns. It matters how we tax it, what we told the IRS it is.
Is that a 1065?
Yeah, that's partnership return. You got it? Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
But a lot of people will set it up. They'll set up an LLC and they'll have it own a corporation. A C Corp is fine. You could not own an S Corp. Nope. Under this scenario, you'd be doing some bad stuff and you'd violate it. So it's a C Corp. So the C Corp pays its own tax. Quick question, Jason. Do you know what the tax rate is for a C Corp?
Ooh.
21%. Yeah, that was pretty, you're not even an accountant. You're kicking butt. So not only can you build stuff.
But what's it going to change to in about 5 or 6 years? What do you think it's going to change to?
I think it was 23 or 26.
Who knows?
C-Corp doesn't phase out. We don't have to phase out like all the
individual
stuff.
Not sure.
All right. Not a tax question, but interesting one. Land, LLC, Wyoming. Tenant stops paying rent. We try to evict them and they challenge. We're not the owners of the property because we're not on the title or any proof. How do we prove it without losing anonymity? Your trustee can hire whoever it wants to toss them out. And you're still the owner. The owner in title is the land trust. And you can act on its behalf or have somebody else act on its behalf. All right. Does managing the property count towards those hours? Yes, absolutely. Anything involved in real estate pretty much counts towards those hours. For stock trader, can you have the corporation be an outside non-partner management company? What is the benefit of having it be a general partner? Ross, that's a huge one. This is the biggest difference. If it's outside, not a partner, your payment is a miscellaneous itemized expense, and it doesn't exist anymore because they did away with miscellaneous itemized expenses. So you get no deduction for it. If it's a partner, it's a guaranteed payment to partner, and that reduces the amount of profit.
It's a partner that is taking a portion of the profit anyway.
Yep. So, sorry, Michael, I'm hobarting some of these, aren't I?
No.
Jeff usually just sits in the back of the room and says,
Jeff usually starts crying at your answers. No, don't say that. I'm an accountant. I'm really conservative.
Jeff is awesome. I miss Jeff. I'd be making fun of him. But it is tax day, so my guess is he's having a nervous breakdown as we speak.
Jeff's a little busy right now.
A land trust. I would like to purchase property in Florida using in the land trust. I am new to land trust. How things are protected from fraud if nothing is recorded? It's not how it works. You want to give him 2 seconds on
land trust is simply a title holding vehicle. It's going to be disregarded or most of the time, and the beneficial owner is going to think the income or loss flows to the beneficial owner.
Yes, that's really nice. Succinct. Yeah. Florida has a statute, by the way, so really easy to use, and you're still on title. Think about a land trust when they first came out in Illinois. The court case was when they were building the Sears Tower, they were using land trust to acquire. And the court really put it out real simple. They said legal title is held in the name of a trustee for the trust. And that trustee could be anybody. It could be, we use companies sometimes. We don't care. But the beneficial ownership is just not listed. It's the beneficiary. So you have two things, beneficial use of that real property and legal title. And so we can make the legal title be a different name. And all it does is it keeps them from being able to look and find everything you own. That's what they're really good for.
The secret sauce is also the trust agreement. But just think of a trust, again, as a title holding vehicle and on title with a trustee that's running it.
Yep.
When people get it confused about different states and whether or not land trusts exist, it's just a revocable trust. And that's all it is. Just like a living trust.
Oh, somebody says to Jason, yes, Jared's talk was great. What a free thinker and a nice guy. How is Kim on there? Weird. All right, next one. Let's see. So, Toby, I want to be clear. If I manage my rental property on a full-time basis, but I'm not licensed, does that time still qualify as real estate activity for tax purposes? Yes. And can I deduct all expenses? Yes. So your travel, training, phone, mileage, all that fun stuff. Yes. Somebody says, should I use an escort for a stock trading business if I need the income to live off? It depends. A lot of times I'd use a C corp because I can get most of the money out tax free.
We're at a rate too. At 21% makes it really attractive.
Yeah, but if you're gonna if you need the money to live off, it depends on how much. So it's all facts and circumstances.
Pay yourself a salary, make a contribution over to a
401k.
QRP. I think some great strategies using corporations.
Somebody says, does an LLC tax as a C corp have the same requirements as a regular C corp, meetings, record keeping, to keep the liability protection?
You got to look at when you look at a business filing like a corporation or an LLC, you start off at the state level. And you're telling the state that, hey, I want to operate underneath the state statute for corporations or the state statute for limited liability companies. And so that's at the state level. And then when you get up to the federal level, you got to say if you're going to be a corporation, you can choose a C corporation or an S corporation, or an LLC can choose a C corporation, S corporation, partnership, or disregarded. So from a record keeping standpoint,
following this,
from a liability standpoint, you still have to go ahead and do the record keeping. From an IRS standpoint, they want you to do books and records, and they want you to show where the expenses came in and justify your expenses and deductions. And right. So it's the same for the IRS, whether it's an LLC taxes a C or if it's just a straight C corporation.
Yep. What Michael just said, and you said it really well. I was making fun of you because you're sounding like me.
I've been around you for like 20 years, Toby.
There's a quiz on it later.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I always look at it like there's three things. There's the state, there's the feds, and then there's judges or third parties, lenders, whatever. So you have an LLC. To the state, that's the only party that cares that it's an LLC. Everybody else
don't even care what SRC.
Feds, they say, I don't even know what an LLC is. Please tell me what it is. And you tell the feds how you want it taxed. So they literally don't have a tax designation for an LLC. So you have to tell them. And then for third parties, all they really care about is, do you actually keep records and do you have a P&L, do you have a balance sheet? And do you have, are you keeping some written, notations on your decision making so that we should recognize it and give it respect? Those are all three areas. And
I always think it's funny when you hear a client saying, you know, I have an LLC, and then you ask them, how is it taxed? And they say, oh, my accountant says it's taxed as an LLC.
Yeah.
So there's no such thing as an LLC taxation.
Yep.
It's all federal.
That's just the federal. So we care about the state and we care about the third parties. We care about them equally. So we always care about it. All right. Somebody else says, does an LLC tax? Oh, no, that's already got that. Jared talk. Here, I'm going to jump into another one of these questions. Let's see. There we go. If a person uses cost segregation on a rental home, isn't the depreciation recaptured upon the sale of the home? And then can a 1031 exchange be used?
I was really impressed by this question.
All right. You knock it out.
No,
you're close to there.
No, go ahead.
You don't want to do it?
No, you take it. But this is a pretty advanced strategy that just came about with the Tax Act.
All right. So this is fun. So cost segregation in its... You guys have heard me talk about this before, but I'm just going to give you the 2 seconds. When you have a structure, any sort of building, it's 1250 property is the structure. And you and if you do nothing else, everything's structure. So it's 27 and a half years for residential property, 39 years for commercial. And what that means is whatever that, you know, cement, wood, metal, whatever you built on it, it has a useful life and you get a deduction of 1/39th if it's commercial or 127.5. If it's residential, you get a deduction for that amount every year against its income. When you do cost segregation, you say, well, we know that there's a bunch of stuff in there that's not going to last 39 years or 27 and a half years.
Short life assets.
Yep. So I am going to break it into pieces. It's like my carpeting is my favorite example. It's 5-year property. Your carpeting, you're always going to replace it in 5 years. It sucks after period of time, or it's not worth anything. So first off, your cost segregation is a fancy way of writing a bunch of stuff off. When it's recaptured, it's at ordinary income only to its fair market value. So let's go back to our carpeting. That's 5-year property. You sell the property in 10 years. Don't you have to pay recapture on that? The answer is no. It's actually considered capital gains. This is really, really, really important because even in a 1031 exchange, you're deferring recapture and capital gains. We do not have recapture on short-term assets. It's not the same. It's not that 25%. You either have ordinary income or long-term capital gains. It's either worth something or it's not. If it's worth something, then you recognize whatever that is as ordinary income. And it's usually when you're selling something, a building after a period of time, all of the stuff that you've rapidly depreciated has no value or has minimal value. Like what would you pay somebody for their carpeting that they've been using the last 7 years? You're not going to pay them anything. It's going to cost more to tear it out of there. Its fair market value is zero. So we don't have to worry about it. So the cost segregation is fantastic. What Michael was talking about under the new tax laws is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act says I can write off all short-term assets, anything less than 20 years in 1 year. I have 100% bonus depreciation. And I don't have to, it doesn't have to be new property anymore. That was the old law. You had to be new and put into service in this year. Now I can do it on used property. So we've managed to save quite literally with our clients millions of dollars. I can say that unequivocally. With the folks that I could add up in the top of my head, I just dealt with another one today that we saved about $80,000 to this year. Lane, $200,000, easy. So many people. Do you do cost seg?
I might as well. It's the same thing as a construction bid.
Yep, same thing as because. And when you're doing construction, you already know what it is. It's like as long as I'm going to own it, I may as well write it off. So anyway, and can a 1031 exchange be used? Yes, but exchange you're only worried about the gain. It's actually the best of both worlds. In fact, there's a lot of practitioners out there writing about how potent it is to do a cost seg with a 1031.
In conjunction, yep.
Yep, because when you sell that property, you're not having to recapture it ever. That's like, yeah, it's actually really cool. Are we way over?
Yeah, we're.
Oh, sorry.
We're in overtime.
All right. What's the best entity structure for Airbnb, HomeAway, and VRBO? My plan is to sign long-term leases, 12 months, and rent them out on these platforms. What do you think?
Well, I think that like we covered this when we talked about having the property owned by an LLC and then do a master lease with a corporation. That corporation then rents it out through Airbnb.
Yeah. What you end up doing, what Michael just said, is when you have 7 days or less of rental. So like if I am, what I do is you take your total number of days you rented a property, divide it by the number of guests. So let's say that I rented my property for 140 days and I had, let's say, 30 guests. I should pick a better number.
Total bookings divided by total number of days rented.
Yeah,
and it's equals 7 days. Average length of stay.
Yeah. That's ordinary income. Yep. You still get depreciation and stuff, but it's subject to self-employment tax, which if you guys know what that is, old age, death, and survivors of Medicare, 15.3%. The actual tax hit is 14.1%, to be technical, up to about $137,000, $138,000, I think, this year. So, we tend to want to stay away from that. The better route is to what they're doing, which is they're leasing it for 12 months. You do that through a corporation. So the best entity structure would be an LLC taxed as a corporation or a corporation, assuming that these are all short term, 7 days or less. So and renting them out on these platforms, then you have the ability to get that money out, at least not subject to the self-employment tax, or at least a portion. So you can have an S corp. You have to pay yourself a small salary. Or C Corp, where you just let it be taxed at 21%. And there's lots of tax strategies using an accountable plan and some other things to get the money out.
Just make sure you read the lease and make sure that you're not violating the lease with the 12-month lease.
Who did that? I think it was one of the Trumps that
you got to be really careful.
Leased a property in New York and then was Airbnb-ing it out.
Just make sure that there's not any restrictions on it.
So you can, somebody says, so you can defer depreciation recapture when doing a 1031 exchange. Can you defer depreciation recapture if doing reinvesting into a qualified opportunity zone? Yes, Russ, you can. And that is a great question. That was one that we needed the regs to give us the answer on. So you can do both. And for those of you guys who don't know what that is, qualified opportunity zones, it said capital gains, but it also includes all 1231, including your recapture. Great question, Ross. You rock. What's the tax form to specify C corp or S corp? You do the C corp one on an SS4. The S corp is you file an additional 2553. Yeah.
Within 75 days of the date of filing.
Have a shelved C corp that hasn't filed any tax returns for the last 5 years. Is there any major concern in filing these returns that have zero income and zero loss? No. You still have a requirement to pay. File the return. You just have no tax and there's no penalty. So you want to make sure you file those. Do I need to file a separate tax return for a land trust? Mina, no, you don't have to. It goes to it's a grantor trust 99.9% of the time. It's whoever the beneficiary is going to report all that income. I'm starting an Amazon-based e-commerce business with some partners. What is the best entity for tax advantage and asset protection?
It's going to depend on what you guys want out of it. Could, if you know, just pass or bring forth income, partnership return might be the best way. If you want to do some active and do some maybe a retirement plan, you might want to do an S corporation.
Yep. It always is going to depend. So the answer is always going to be, is it going to make money, lose money? What are they putting in?
What kind of benefits can you pull out of it? What's your long-term strategy also?
Yep.
Keep in mind, you can always change the tax status later on, too.
Yep. We already had the special guest, so that's all of our questions. There's a couple more. Two for Tuesday, always. We do the TaxWise workshop. We have one coming up in a couple weeks. Still time to register, at least access live stream. I think it's sold out for the live, but you get access to all of our workshops that we did for TaxWise, all the recordings, plus you can attend on the live stream to the one coming up in November. And you get the Bulletproof Investor. You get two tickets to our Tax and Asset Protection Workshop. That's a live event, 3 days. You get Clint's Tax and Asset Protection for Real Estate Investors. You get a three-part video series. And you get a strategy session. You get both of those things for a whopping $197. That's crazy. You literally have 5 days of classes there that you get access to.
That video series is pretty awesome too.
That's because Michael did one of the video series.
It's worth it. I've been to it several times. Yeah. I've watched TaxWise like 4 times.
Oh, you rock. Yeah. Jason's a very large person. So when I say he rocks, I mean it. All right, what do we got? Can I use a timeshare for VRBO? Yeah.
Are there any advantages? Make sure you don't violate any of the regulations.
Yeah. And then are there any advantages to holding deed to the property versus standard timeshare? I always want deed. If you have a W-2 job, do you still pay Social Security tax? Yes. On every dollar you make, you're getting hit with Social Security tax. That's one of the FICA misnomers. FICA. So you can defer, depreciate. All right, we're not getting into that. I think we're getting, we've been answering.
We're pretty good.
We've been doing good. All right, so I think we have just a couple little things to finish up on. And you know what's really gorgeous? All the cool people we get to meet. You should honestly consider coming to our executive retreats. I have never had one where somebody came back and said, you know what, that was horrible.
No.
Partly because we always have them in really cool places. We either do cruises. I think we're going to do a European cruise next year.
You know, one of the things about the executive retreat is that not only do we provide content, but I think equally important is the synergy that goes on with like-minded people. You find yourself investing in real estate. Sometimes you go through a little, some valleys. You know, the people here are all like-minded, and we're all in this together. So just watching everyone work together has just been fantastic.
Absolutely. Great group. And some of them have done quite literally, you've done millions of dollars with the attendees from last year, right?
Yes.
Yep. So we have a couple that have done over $100 million worth of transactions. You want
to
add?
Mike and Kendall, I gave a contact to out of Georgia. I think they're doing at least $1 million worth of work.
Well, yep.
So I handed them a golden egg.
See, it's all about this is the beautiful part, is that you have people that are actually trying to help each other and they're not asking for something in return, which is what's always cool. Last little thing, if you have questions, always shoot them in Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors or visit AndersonAdvisors.com. Check us out on Google Play and iPad or iTunes. And get in, really, like we quite literally get hundreds of questions in. We make sure that you're getting answers. Sometimes people say, well, hey, I haven't got an answer. It might take more than a few days, guys, because we're getting a ton of these in and we don't charge for it. So when you're asking little questions, I don't know of any other place you're going to get tax attorneys and accountants answering for free, but at our lovely Tax Tuesday. So thanks for joining us. I think we're way out of time. Michael talks so dang much that he goes way over. Thanks, Jason, for hanging out with us. Yeah, and guys, next time. We'll see you next time.
All right, best of luck, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.